Welcome everyone to What the Force, and welcome to Chapter 15, The Believer, written and directed by Rick Fumiyuwa, who is, I think, one of my favorite Star Wars creators.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And with me is Ty Black.
Yeah. Hello. The Believer.
Yeah. I don't know. People that start with R in their first name seem to create really good Star Wars. We have a sample size of two.
But hey, that's all the proof you need, right?
Right. Rain Roberts, Star Wars movie when. She did write and direct, a short movie that actually premiered over the summer. So give Rain Roberts a show. Or, you know, a bunch of Star Wars shorts would be really, really cool, too. I'm not sure if she's into that, but if she wants to do it, let her do the thing. The R's have it.
Totally.
This is Once Upon a Time in the Outer Rim. We cover The Mandalorian from a connotative genre, fairy tale and mythic lens perspective. Just as a reminder, make sure to like and or subscribe on your podcast app of choice and or YouTube. It helps you keep up with the show. This will be a full spoiler chat. And I just wanted to shout out to all of the people that I talk with throughout the day as I'm processing these episodes, especially Kyle, my husband, and Laura K.A., who always does amazing Twitter threads on the episodes and different symbolic things that are happening. So definitely check out her stuff. And with that, Ty, on to the summary.
Sure. Okay. The summary for this episode, The Believer. This episode begins in the Carthon chop fields, where we find ex-mercenary Miggs Mayfield serving his time dismantling TIE fighters. Using Cardoon's new title of New Republic Marshal, they easily recruit Mayfield into their ragtag team of misfits. In order to get coordinates to find Grogu, they have to break into an Imperial refinery. Since they are the only ones that will not be recognized, Din and Miggs go undercover as Imperial transport workers, where they must operate a transport vehicle carrying volatile Rhydonium. Along the way, Din must deal with Miggs' moral relativism, the judgment of a child, and being attacked by pirates. At the last possible moment, TIE fighters blast away the remaining pirates, reminding us that Din and Miggs, for the time being, are on the other side of this war. After successfully getting into the refinery, Miggs tells Din that he might be recognized by a nearby officer, so Din bends the rules of his creed and removes the Imperial helmet, allowing his face to be scanned by a terminal. Now having the coordinates, all they have to do is leave, but Imperial officer Valen Hess invites them to have a drink with him. This is the officer that Miggs knows, and he's not leaving without dealing with him. Blowing their cover, Miggs shoots Valen, and Din and Miggs now must fight their way out of the refinery and onto the roof, where they are rescued by Fett and the Slave One. Looking back at the refinery through the scope of a rifle, Miggs takes one last shot and blows up the transports carrying the Rhydonium. Because of his assistance, Kara lets Miggs walk away from the New Republic custody, and we then cut to Moff Gideon's ship, where his lieutenant has a message for him, from Din. In the message, Din repeats Gideon's message back to him. He means more to me than you will ever know.
Yep.
It was good.
That was a good moment. Yes, that felt very satisfying.
Yeah, and there was a lot of this episode that was very satisfying. I got a lot of the negative thoughts out, but we will talk more about those as well, just because that's what we do when we analyze these themes and everything.
Like, you and I both have been enjoying this season, but we are very critical of this season compared to last season, because there are things that have been I don't know, sticky. You're like, right. Hey, could I have this piece of chocolate, but did it have to be so melted? No.
Yeah. There are things that are consistent. Star Wars has a consistency of like not being entirely consistent. Like, they're consistent with not being consistent on the themes. And it's always fun to, you know, after getting out kind of the poison of it all, like, and being upset about it, it is fun to sit down and really think about why. So that's why I really enjoy our chats, and I like covering this show because you find so much in asking why.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, even just starting with the title, The Believer.
Mm.
Well, let's talk about that, because it's like there was like two articles that we noticed that came out. There was one complaining about Din Djarin's mustache, which was just utterly ridiculous. It's like, well, A, because it looks better with a mustache. So, yeah. And B, so what if he has a mustache? Anyways, that's enough on the mustache controversy.
It was a funny headline.
Yeah, it was weird. And then, you know, and then also like, what is the believer? Who is the believer? It's like they're trying to suss that out. So I wanted to ask you, who is the believer?
You know, I'm sure you have a better answer than I do on this one, because I didn't think about it until this morning. And the whole time I was writing the summary, I was like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's got to be Migs. But, you know, I don't know why they chose this name.
Oh, it's, in my opinion, it's Din because of the end, right? Because of where he gets to throughout the course of the episode. He becomes a believer in the internal compass that he has chosen to finally own after stripping away all of his artifices, his ship, his creed, his armor, like his mask. Like, he stripped away all of these things that have been containing him and that he thinks are required to define him. And he becomes a believer in his true direction, which is he believes that he is a better person when he is with Grogu.
Mm-hmm. It would be nice to see him, like, say that in the next episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But remember, he is much slower on his journey than I think both you and I would like.
Yeah, for sure. Right? Yeah. And slower than seemingly, like, the other parts of the show have been, because, like, other things are happening that reflect his journey that are happening at a faster pace, and he's not able to, like, emote those things. Mm-hmm. That's so frustrating.
I mean, I think that ties into some of the, struggles that we as, I don't know, mass fiction consumers expect out of our heroes, is that they experience things and then reflect those experiences back to us. And he is, because of his blank face, i.e. helmet, and although the character, like the stunt doubles and Pedro do act the hell out of, you know, the armor and the mask, especially like all the mask work, like he does a lot of things with like his shoulders and stuff, and yeah, and his, and like how his head is leaning and stuff, it's still, because it is mostly blank from an emotional perspective, facial features, it is a self-insert.
Yeah.
And so is this a self-insert for you, Ty? No.
No.
Is this a self-insert for me? No. It is a self-insert for the men in the audience.
Right.
Right. And that's why it also feels semi-video gamey too, right? Mm-hmm. It is meant, I think it's purposefully structured to be this way. I mean, it's a choice. I want more out of the show, and maybe they're getting us there. Like, they're slowly inching us into real emotion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't lose the armor this season at the end, he'll lose it at the end of next season.
Right.
Like, fully.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
So other thoughts and feelings.
He had spear practice, conveniently.
Yeah, this is so funny, because I thought he was going to actually have spear practice, like a training montage of
sorts.
No,
this is better. this is better. You have it on the road of trials, right? He has a mentor of sorts with him, right? But a reluctant mentor. And he's like being attacked by, you know, the pirates.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I loved it. That's the way to learn things on a hero's journey.
Oh, yeah. No, that it was fun. That was a really, really fun way to do that.
Morak in and of itself. I love the line that like, oh, nothing's on Morak. And it's like, well, actually, what you find out is that the Empire is on Morak and mining, which is significant. We could probably go into that a little bit when we get into like symbolism and stuff. But also there's just regular people that live on Morak too. Mm-hmm. It's like a reminder that this is a microcosm of the larger universe.
Right. Yep.
Boba Fett had the best line of the entire show. I love how like sardonic, old, sarcastic he is when they're like, Fett, you go in, and he's like, let's just say they might recognize my face. I spit laughed. Like I was drinking some water and I spit it out. It was so good.
Oh yeah, it was really funny. I had a delayed reaction because I thought, oh yeah, Boba Fett. He's gotten around the galaxy. And then I was like, oh wait.
Oh wait, the Empire is built on your face. Yes.
Oh Lord. It was great.
Yeah.
It was really funny. I just realized that you're going to compare Mayfeld to DJ.
Yeah. Mayfeld had a DJ speech.
Because of the moral relativism.
Yeah.
The whole we're all the same, but
we destroy him today, you destroy him tomorrow. Like, there was very much that we blow him up today, you blow him up tomorrow, and like, what does it all matter? But in the end, like DJ's speech kind of takes it a step further, mm-hmm. and says, you know, whatever it take, you know, if you figure out a way to sleep at night, you're doing better than most people.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what do you have to do to in some ways when you have committed terrible things, which we do find out in this episode what kind of things he has committed, mm-hmm. How do you restore your soul after that? How do you have personal redemption? Because this is what's so fascinating about these lines and what Mayfield shares is that he's literally talking not about what the galaxy will do to you, because the galaxy doesn't care at this point. There's very little rule and law, and there's very little like societal pressure to do anything good, mm-hmm. right? It's the Wild West of the Outer Rim. Like, that is what this is. And he's like, yeah, but you still have to live with yourself. That's a fascinating thing for Star Wars to bring up, mm-hmm. because it reminds us that redemption fundamentally is a personal choice and a personal path.
Yeah. They handled that so well. Like from the moment mm-hmm. that he shows up, you know, and what he goes through and all of that, it was like, hey, they can write redemption where they live in the end.
it's weird how nobody had a problem with Miggs.
Yeah. No one had a problem with it. It's just
I do want to point out that Din is now part of the system. The man knows who he is as a face. They know what his face looks like. They might not necessarily know that he is that person, but if he ever takes off his helmet again, people will. His face is now scanned, right? And that was we've talked about this before on these episodes, how there's always like a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. To gaining things, mm-hmm. and this was his sacrifice.
He sacrificed his
anonymity. He can never do this sort of trick again,
right?
Burning Khan is from Battlefront 2. That takes place 3 months after the Battle of Endor. Burning Khan was one of dozens of worlds targeted by the remnants of the Empire during Operation Cinder. So this is really fascinating because that means that Miggs has been not part of the Empire for only kind of a couple of years, right? He probably left after Operation Cinder.
Right. And he's kind of like, in a way he's kind of like with, like Finn's story and, you know, person not raised by, but you know, he left and he decided to do his own thing, but instead of taking the righteous path, he took the path of a mercenary, which is
it's more like Han in some ways, you know, like he kind of made his way in the galaxy the way he could with the skills, but he was like paid to kill. Like that is mm-hmm. something we've also discussed a lot.
Right.
Kara was wearing a badge.
Oh, yeah. I made this note because I made such a big hoopla over it last episode.
Yeah.
And I probably paused this episode so many times. I was like, is that it? Is that the badge? Is that the badge? And sure enough, yeah. She's wearing it as like a belt buckle kind of thing.
And like, I do want to comment, Gina Carano's scenes, and again, trans rights are human rights. Gina has spread anti-information about wearing masks and disinformation about politics and all sorts of terrible things. So like, not a great role model for your brand, Disney.
No.
Ugh. I hope you do not give her a show.
Yeah.
This episode was very weird for her because she, like, it's cut weird around her. So I'm wondering if, again, they decided to reduce her role to the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because you would think that she is, like, the lead of the show. She's on the front of the freaking poster they released, like, 2 weeks ago. Like, mm-hmm. in the forefront, she's, like, the cover of the last two episodes.
On the thumbnail.
On the thumbnails. Yeah. And yet, like, she's barely in both shows, like,
and she has no like emotional or even like she doesn't have really any reason to be there. Nope. She doesn't really do anything other than like, yeah, she helps get Migs out, but they could have done that without her. So yep. They had a reason why they wanted to use her. It's just very, very strange.
You know, you mentioned that there's like a scene where she's making a face and
yeah,
like, then it like cuts away from.
Yeah, there's like two scenes where there's like some dialogue between like her and Migs, but then there's like a split second where she kind of like looks and her eyes kind of look away but they're not looking at Migs. So I was really confused because I thought there was something missing, which after you said that the episode was shorter, yeah, it seems like they cut stuff in weird areas because there was all this dialogue between them and then there was no like resolution and there was almost like dialogue would drop off between them and weird spots.
So Migs and Kara have like these moments and he's like, and grumpy feminist pig over here, or whatever he says. I don't know. Like he's like insulting her and she doesn't react normal. Like it's very odd. So like if they are taking steps to actively reduce her role, thank you.
Yeah. It is frustrating, right? Though, because you have like these two great characters, right? Fennec and Cara Dune.
Yeah.
They're, you know, at the beginning, Cara was a good character, but now it's hard. It's hard to stomach her.
I mean, I wish they would just recast her, honestly. If they brought back the character, just recast her.
Well, yeah. But they also have, you know, we have Fennec now that we can play with, and they're not playing with her, they're not using her for dialogue or anything. And again, it all goes back to that problem with how Star Wars uses women, especially strong women, is that they make them so stoic and quiet and loyal. You know, we can't have another character like Leia. We can't have another character.
Ventress?
You know, who's
not quiet or stoic.
But again, you know, that's in animation,
yeah,
they get away with a lot more.
Yeah, but we've talked about that, like how animation creates like a stylistic lens that allows people to get away with more. And it sucks that they think that they need to tone women down.
Yeah, because they did it with Ahsoka with the live action. Mm-hmm. She's a lot more stoic, a lot more quiet. Even if that's where she's supposed to be in her journey, it still is a part of that pattern. And it's very frustrating to watch.
Well, even the person that Ahsoka goes against, the person that fights with the spear, the lady.
Oh, yeah. The magistrate or something? I don't know. I forget her name, but
whatever. Yeah. Her name. She's also stoic, even though she's like evil. She could have been cackling evil, like with her, like, I'm going to kill these people. Mwahaha.
Yeah.
You know, or she could have been like, would you like a grape? And like fed it to him, or like, you know, like they could have just gone over the top with women. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we need a little bit more of that.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, I mean, the most emoty woman that has gotten away with it has been Jin.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because she had started out with being angry and kind of bitter at the whole world. And
she's also like sarcastic and like, but unfortunately, because she's the only woman, she is the one of the guys woman, right? So that's also a frustrating thing to see.
Yeah, definitely. Right. That was always my issue with Rogue One, but
yeah.
But yeah, live action women, man, we need them to be more interesting.
I would say that this is probably your main criticism, and I also agree with it. Mm-hmm. Why use Megs when Boba was right there?
Yeah. So this really bothered me because I thought this episode would explore more of like that Boba and Din foil for each other thing. And of obviously the idea of like, what does it mean to be a Mandalorian? Maybe talking a little bit about each other's past or like poking at those differences and those similarities, you know, just the way they did with Migs and Din in the car when he takes off the helmet and is like, oh, it feels better with it off. Like that very easily could have been Boba. And it would have been fun to have him be a mentor to Din and Din be like reluctantly that student. Like
I think that there's a place for Boba to be explored from what he thinks about his past. And I think that that would have been a very good foil for Din.
Right. So yeah.
Both being bounty hunters, both having, you know, things that they've potentially done in the past. And now that they've both been reborn and Boba has seen not only the Clone Wars from a firsthand perspective where he could understand it, but also like he's only a couple of years older than Din because they both experienced the Clone Wars as kids. Right?
Yeah, true.
Boba definitely has seen more mileage.
Yeah, for sure.
Because he looks so much older than Din.
Yeah. And yeah, well, he's also the types of things he's gone through are a lot different, like being a mercenary versus being a bounty hunter. Like there's that loyalty and that creed and that stability with what Din has had. And that's even though it's the same type of job, basically.
I mean, Boba was a bounty hunter, right? That's why
Boba was a bounty hunter, but like, but he was more of a mercenary at the end of the day though, because he did not follow a creed.
Like, he would do anything for anybody kind of situation. Yeah.
So again, like they're like the same, but they're different.
Yeah. So. I mean, I hope that Boba is still in next season and that we actually get more of that. It would just be nice to actually have some time to explore those aspects of it.
Yeah. I'm not mad that they brought back Migs. I'm just like, oh, but this could have been.
Yeah. And Migs's role in the psychology of Din has changed.
Yeah, definitely.
From the prisoner episode, right? He was the guy who killed for money.
Mm-hmm. Represented that part of Din's psyche of, do I only do this to get by? Do I only do this for money?
And now Migs was there to challenge his assumptions about the layers that he had built up that he felt defined him. And this is just, it is such an interesting thing. And we're going to go into it in a little bit, but like, it's, are you defined by the external? In Mandalorian, symbolically and literally, they mean the things that you have around you, or are you defined by the internal? And that is what Migs is questioning by symbolically, like asking him about the symbolism of wearing his mask, about wearing his armor, about the numbers, about all of this stuff. And we're going to get into all of that. So that'll be really cool. I did want to shout out a few genre pieces. Alex, who... fingers crossed, we'll be back next week. He said he could make it for the finale. So I'm super excited to have Alex back. But he said that the table scene with Valen Hess was very Tarantino shot. Like close-ups on people's faces. Like, you don't really see the whole table very often. You see, like, the reactions between people. And I totally agree. It was very, it was such, like, anytime that Mandalorian decides to have close conversations with other people, it's always exceptional and amazing. And then they immediately have to be like, oh man, we ate those vegetables, now for sugar. And the sugar is like, you know, the action and the combat and things like that. And I wish that they would just give us more of those character moments and struggles, because if you look to, you know, say like Empire Strikes Back, people remember like the Yoda conversations. They remember, you know, although the lightsaber stuff, it's really a conversation between father and son. The battle, you know, in Bespin is a conversation between Luke and Vader, right? We remember the conversations. We don't remember the pew pew.
Yeah, exactly. The reason why people remember certain lightsaber fights over others is because there was an emotional connection and a conflict that was happening. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not.
And the conflict resolution with lightsabers is emotionally satisfying, right?
Right.
Pew pew can help move the plot along, right? But it has to have emotional weight to it. There is a struggle in Empire Strikes Back where Leia and Han realize that they are bait for Luke and they do not want to be that. You know, there is that conflict there. They're like, how do we get out of this? How do we warn Luke? And then, you know, it's all resolved because of this really important lightsaber battle that happens at the end. But it's basically a conversation with lightsabers. It's not, you know, and there is a conversation at the end when they lose their lightsabers. So it's, the conversations are very, very important. And I know that it takes more writers, but the conversations, and this episode proves how important those conversations are.
And I just want to say, like, there's one little tiny change they could have made in the pew pew that was happening in this episode. It literally could have brought so much more emotional conflict to the episode with no words. And it would have been if Din would have gotten his helmet pulled off during the fight, like on the train thing, on the transport, and just that one little second of exposure would have brought so much more conflict to him for that whole episode, because he's not wearing his helmet. He's not wearing his armor. You know, he's vulnerable. And if he, and there was like the moments where his, like the armor on the arms got blown off.
Like if he was stripped away of this fake armor, that would have been really good.
It would have been cool, but and that would have added more of a emphasis to where he actually has to willingly take it off later. So I don't know, like little things like that I think about a lot, and it's like frustrating from the perspective of the audience because I'm not a writer. Like I don't write this stuff, and yet, you know, I can see these little threads that are just begging to be pulled at.
Symbolic Chekhov's guns.
Yeah.
I used to call them uncut Atropos, like, strings, right? Because they're kind of like strings of fate. They're symbolic strings, and they've been uncut or they've been unutilized, you know? Like, there's a symbolism left on the floor. I missed opportunities, and you know, it's no dig on the creators for not going in that way. It's just like, oh, that would have been really cool symbolically if they had gone in that direction.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned Mad Max. Did you want to?
Oh, yeah. Just that there was a when all of the pirates like kind of come out of the dust or the smoke that was left from the explosion. It was very Mad Max. It was
like the new one, right? Like Fury Road.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched the old ones in like forever, but I don't think that happens in the old ones. I think it's definitely like a newer thing.
Yeah. They, that like them, like riding the kind of like speeder ships and they reminded me a lot of Mad Max and that feel and like the very much like the Dogs of War type, thing.
Yeah. Definitely.
So we haven't really talked too much about themes, but this episode actually had like a lot of thematic material to dig into. And so overall, this episode is about the question of what it takes to restore your soul, right?
Right.
And it's a question that's posed textually and also symbolically through the episode. And I just like, I really want to say Star Wars sometimes struggles with being consistently on point with this as a core theme. And they want to always make this point, but sometimes the characters fail at it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really hard thing to suss out. And I hope that a creator in the future fully makes the point that I am about to make, that BTS in front of the UN made very succinctly. And if you have not watched Kim Namjoon's speech to the UN with BTS, the rest of the BTS members, this is, you know, one of the largest bands in the whole world right now.
Yeah.
This is from a couple of years ago. It's from 2018. Essentially, he's talking about how people make mistakes, and you are not just the, you know, you're not just made up of the good choices that you've made. You're also made up of the bad choices that you've made and what you have learned from those choices. And that the only way forward is to truthfully find your name, find your voice by speaking yourself. I.e., yeah. To thine own self be true. You cannot find this by what other people are telling you to be or what other things are on the external. You have to find it inside of yourself. That is what he is saying. And it is an excellent speech. It makes me cry every time that I listen to it.
Same.
It's just really, really important, because that is the so what of the hero's journey, right? And that is what this episode is saying, is that you are the bad things, you are the good choices that you've made, and you have to find a way to sleep with those at night.
Yeah.
Right? You have to find a way to live through all of the bad choices that you've made. And it does talk about what are your options? And some of them are not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like the idea of speak yourself is such an interesting way. Like it's like a banner. It's a banner for, you know, a journey to self-discovery, but it's so simple. And I think people forget that a lot, that the hero's journey is actually very simple. If you have the goal of speaking yourself, then that leads you down that path.
Mm-hmm.
That leads you on the heroic path. It's very, very simple. And yet Star Wars wants to make it complicated, of course, for dramatic effect.
Yeah. And we're going to come back to talking about how some of the symbolism ties into this, because I think it's really important that it plays out. But I wanted to kind of almost say it like a thesis statement of this episode, is that this is about finding your truth. This whole episode, symbolically and textually, is about that speech at the end where Din says to Gideon, Moff Gideon, you have something I want. You may think you have some idea of what you are in possession of, but you do not. Soon he will be back with me. He means more to me than you will ever know. He spoke himself at the end.
Right. Oh. Which is also him speaking back at Gideon what Gideon's words were. So it also means that Din is Gideon.
Yes.
Right? Because, and that gets in the whole.
Gideon is the dark part of himself reflected out there in the universe, which is really, really important for us to understand as we go into later seasons and hopefully this confrontation at the end of this season.
Yeah, for sure. But that gets at the heart of like what this whole episode was doing in its themes. Because the next part of this theme that was very apparent in this episode, which was that the cutting off of the shadow and discarding it, And this is something we've seen over and over again with Star Wars, when anyone is kind of like faced with the shadow, right? What mm-hmm. do they do? But I thought this was so interesting because they didn't do it in this episode the way that I've seen it done before in Star Wars. And you could even say that at the beginning of the episode, when they're in the like graveyard of TIE fighter ships, like that was dismantling what the New Republic believes to be evil.
Yeah.
Because they determined it to be evil, right?
Yeah.
And then at the middle of the episode, our heroes are saved by TIE fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's questioning, okay, you can disregard this or you can cut it away and you can dismantle it. But if you don't deal with it, it's going to come back. And sometimes it can come back to save your butt. Mm-hmm. So it's very, that part really, really messed with my head. And I have a mythic parallel to talk about later with it. But it also feeds into the idea of like blurring the lines between good and evil, bending the rules, because mm-hmm. there was that part where, you know, when Din does have to decide to take his helmet off.
Well, because he's in denial for the first half of the episode that he will ever have to show his face. But what is showing his face mean? Is it taking off the helmet? Is it showing his face?
Yeah.
Or is it something more symbolic? And I think that that's actually, like, you know, a thing that we'll get to. He's going to probably figure out that his justification and his worldview is something
flawed.
More internal. Yeah.
But
it is flawed, this idea that you cannot, and, you know, from a meta perspective, it's a larger, like, you cannot form attachments. That is, like, symbolically what it is saying in the universe. These Mandalorians cannot truthfully know the other person mm-hmm. in a relationship. They cannot form attachments.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big meta
conversation.
And I think,
totally. And I think also Miggs calls him out on saying, like, something about bending the rules, or something like that. He basically calls him out on bending the rules of his creed. Like, okay, you can take the helmet off now.
Yeah. Because that conversation was fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is it taking off the helmet or is it showing your face? Because I find people are willing to bend the rules when everything is on the line, you know, like when it really matters.
And that also paralleled the Kara bending the rules of, like, the law in order mm-hmm. to get him out, which is probably one of the things they cut now to think of it. That might have been her resolution of that episode that they might have cut. It all kind of flows in together, that whole idea of blurring the lines. And also there was that idea that they talked about of order versus freedom, and that's the Valen's little thing, mm-hmm. just that this is a fight between freedom and order, or, you know, like the difference between order and tyranny. And
this is something that's present in much of Star Wars, like, you know, Vader's big, let's bring order to the galaxy, you know, mm-hmm. and like there's a difference between order and tyranny, right? There is a difference between safety, which is, you know, in society, we have to give up some of our personal freedoms so that we can exist and have a community, mm-hmm. right? And Star Wars, like, it doesn't say it, it shows it, which is, again, my, like, frustrating thing with, like, the false binaries that exist in Star Wars, because it is not that you are light side or dark side. You are always on the path and you are finding a middle way between the two, right? Mm-hmm. You are on your own journey and you are always turning towards the light. You are always trying to seek community and compassion and the force of others, right? That is the Star Wars ethics. In short, you sometimes do have to be selfish, though. You have to eat. You have to protect yourself. You have to be selfish to protect yourself, right? But order and freedom is one of those false binaries, right? Mm-hmm. Having protection and security is a form of order, but not at the expense of individuals being able to exist and live their lives and become happy and fruitful members of society, because it's like security and safety for all, not just the few.
Yeah.
And so it is, again, the middle way between these things. It is a false binary. They want like people who think in absolutes, right? The Sith only believe in absolutes. Well, yeah, but so do the Jedi. They say you cannot be anything but the light side.
Right.
But the truth is always somewhere in the middle, and you always have to be leading towards the light.
Yeah. And this is also a binary proposed by bringing Migs back into the mix, mm-hmm. which was Migs has this very, what's the word for it? Like he doesn't care either way. He says that we're all the same. Migs has a very like nihilistic attitude with everything. He says like it's all the same. The good side is bad. The bad side can be good. Like, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. We're all just trying to get by. Again, we've heard all this before from like DJ and other characters, but that's a part of this other binary that's being shown in the episode, which was like, mm-hmm. you can say that and detach yourself from this binary mm-hmm. of good versus evil. And that way you're kind of in this middle area, or you can choose, which is, this is the lesson to be learned, that you should find your own path and you should find something good to live for. Mm-hmm. You should find your community. You should find something to do to be productive in that community.
What does good mean for you?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Find your path, your way, but not a nihilistic way of looking mm-hmm. at it. It's very interesting, but
there's a lot of themes of humanizing and dehumanizing with this, right? So people in this episode, the main characters especially, are either dehumanized or humanized.
Yeah.
At the start of the episode, we have the kind of security robot, which, again, these robots that they use for the New Republic freak the heck out of me. Right? They're just so intimidating. And I know that it's purposeful. They're doing something. I just haven't quite figured it out. But we saw them in The Prisoner, of course, right?
Right.
And he's like, inmate 34667. Inmate 34667, and like gives him 3 seconds to comply or you will be shocked. Like it reminds me a lot of the themes that we see, especially at the start of Les Miserables, the dehumanizing of Jean Valjean, right? Like mm-hmm. that he is not the person, he is the number. This is a common thing that especially societies do to take away the humanity of both our inmates, but also soldiers, but also, you know, we do it on a mass scale by categorizing people by you know, slurs or slangs or mm-hmm. you know, saying all those people. We dehumanize people when we do that. And that is what's happened to the Empire. And so what they're saying is that, again, back to the, there is no difference between the Empire and the New Republic. There is no difference between being a prisoner in the New Republic and being a prisoner, quote unquote, a soldier of the Empire. There is no difference. They are the same. You are just a cog in the machine. You are not an individual. That is very, very important. And like replacing one mask for another is no difference in Mayfield's eyes. When you take it off, finally, you can see the road that you're on.
Yeah.
When you are speaking yourself, back to what Namjoon said in his UN speech, when you speak yourself, you are able to actually be yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And this kind of goes all the way back to like bringing up like the machine and what the machine is. This goes back to
The Last Jedi.
Well, yeah, but like also like the original trilogy.
Yeah. Well, and because this is a core theme of Star Wars. It's the
core theme.
The war is the machine of death. It is the conflict between it is the thing that is grinding up society.
Yes. Yeah. And like understandably in the real world, like being a soldier can be an honorable thing, but in storytelling and in myth, like that is a part of the machine. Like you are just a cog in the wheel. And this is something that, like, you know, makes a lot of people uncomfortable because this was the message of the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. Vietnam was a unjust war, and as Americans, or as, you know, members of, like, you know, the Western world mostly, we're all a part of the empire, and we're all a part of
the colonialistic
bad side
attitudes that the empire has, right?
Yeah, we're the bad side of that conflict. And this brings me to this quote from Campbell, and Campbell obviously pointed out the obvious Vietnam parallels in Star Wars when he was ever asked about Star Wars. But his main interest in this parallel was about how the empire is the machine. And there's also that little thing that happens when, you know, Luke has his arm cut off and replaced with a robotic arm. Mm-hmm. So he becomes a part, he is a machine, mm-hmm. right? So that little bit of darkness that will always be with him symbolically, and I mean, it's very much done emotionally within the context of the movies, but he decides he's not going to let that define him. He decides that he's going to walk his own path and be his own idea of a hero. Stand by.
What a wonderful power the machine gives you, but is it going to dominate you? The statement of what the need and want is must come from you, not from the machine, and not from the government that's teaching you, or not even from the clergy. It has to come from one's own inside. And the minute you let that drop and take what the dictation of the time is instead of the dictation of your own eternity, you have capitulated to the devil, and you're in hell.
Wow. So that's really, really important, because Din and Migs wear the garments of the empire, and suddenly they are heroes of the empire, right? It's very
yes.
easy to be absorbed by the cogs in the machine. And then the troopers, when they bring in the Rhydonium, they are serving the empire. They bring in the Rhydonium, the troopers themselves salute. And I read on the internet, like, and on our Discord server, that people in the military, some people who served in the military or had family members, were deeply uncomfortable with troopers from the Empire saluting. But this has always been the parallel, that if you are serving the machine and not your own, you know, your own journey, you are the Empire.
Right.
It's hard. It's a hard thing, but Star Wars has always said that.
Right. Yeah, I really like how he says, you know, the dictation of your own eternity, which means mm-hmm. that there is a rule book that lies within you.
That's the mask of eternity, that when you can transcend
yes.
the binary. That's what he's saying. Yeah. I mean, watch Power of Myth. He and Bill explain life like way better than us. But
there's one more thing at the end of this, because this is the confusing part, I think, where he says you've capitulated to the devil and you're in hell. I love when he says that, because first of all, he says it with a smile and he's like making a joke. he's like making a joke. He thinks he's clever by saying that. And like basically what it comes from is that in a hero's journey, like in a mythic journey, you have to delve, you know, you delve into your subconsciousness, mm-hmm. where sometimes you will meet the devil, sometimes you will go to hell, right? But if you've capitulated to the devil, that means you have lost yourself. You have mm-hmm. You are not able to detach yourself from what is, from the external, and you mm-hmm. cannot go into the internal. So I just find it so fascinating. It's one of my favorite it's one of my favorite Campbell quotes, and it is how he talks about Star Wars, because he is in that moment, the context is about Star Wars. So
yeah,
it's very cool. Much.
Yeah. All right, let's dig into some mythic stuff.
Let's dig into some myth.
I'm going to talk about kind of the mythic pieces that we saw. And Rick always brings his A game.
Yeah. Yeah, Rick knows what he's doing.
And so, like, I think he's still attached to Children of Blood and Bone. So, you know, that was announced that it was still being made by Lucasfilm. So I'm very excited about that. That'll be really good.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about, like, this weird thing. Basically, one of the things that came to my mind when I was looking at, like, the TIE fighter symbolism was the idea of the Ship of Theseus paradox, mm-hmm. Which, if you don't know, is just basically a philosophical question asked by Plutarch, like, really long time ago. I think it was, like, it was definitely, like, Greek and Roman time. Hold on, let me pull it up because I don't want to butcher it. Theseus's ship. Yeah, so it was around, like, oh my goodness. The whole paradox, the whole idea of the paradox goes back forever, but it's around like 500, 400 BC, like discussed by like Plato and Heracles, and then written down by Plutarch, that this was like a question that people would ask, that philosophers would discuss. And it's like, it's basically this thought experiment about a ship that belonged to Theseus in the myth, in Theseus's myth, and saying that whenever the ship went to different ports along its journey, it got a little beat up, so they would have to replace planks, replace different parts of the ship along the journey, to the point where none of the original pieces of the ship were there on the ship anymore. So is it still the same ship, or is it a new ship? And on top of that, like, is it Theseus's ship, right? Is like, is it given that ownership, or are all the other pieces Theseus's ship? So what it is doing is asking the question of, is something defined by being, or is something defined by what meaning you give to it? And so this idea, and that's one way to look at it, because there are many ways to look at this question, but also what it does later on in like Jungian thought and like modern philosophy and modern like cognitive thought, mm-hmm. is it makes us question if we are defined by our internal thought of just our neural like synapses firing, and because we think that we are, therefore we are, right? I think, therefore I am. Mm-hmm. Or are we defined, are we because of other people's acceptance and acknowledgement of us being there?
Yeah.
So this is kind of like it's like one of the oldest philosophical questions. And the Ship of Theseus is just a really good way of
framing it.
Yeah, yeah. And giving it something for people to like actually like see in their minds. But what was cool about the symbology in this episode is that they're literally dismantling something in the beginning of the episode. They show that thing now together in the middle of the episode. And at the end, they blow everything up again. Mm-hmm. And you can see this interior conflict going on with, like, you know, in the internal conflict with Migs that's going on at the same time, and is thus a reflection of Din, which is, who am I? What do I stand for? Well, I'm not that. I am anything but that, you know? It makes you question, okay, well, it's like, how do I say this? There's this idea in Western thought that like your individualism is the only thing that defines you. Mm. Like you have to be like individual. You have to be different from everybody else in order to be. Mm-hmm. And this is like a very modern phenomena. Whereas in other areas of thought, just being and just existing is enough, because other people can see you and other people can provide for you. Like there's mm-hmm. a community aspect there. But in Western thought, the idea of the soul of the one is mm-hmm. much more important. And that gets in the way of doing this. It gets in the way of like going on that journey to oneself. It gets in the way of detaching yourself from what is and delving into one psyche and finding your own path, because you're so defined by the idea that you are an individual and you are
a unique and beautiful soul from God's creation, and you have nothing to try to work on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you're told that, you never realize that you actually have to choose that and you actually have to go on a journey to find that, then in Campbell's words, like, you've capitulated to the devil.
Yeah. Like the hero's journey, like, especially if you view it with a Maureen Murdoch lens, right? The heroine's journey, the power has always existed in you.
Yes.
You just have to go on this adventure and on these trials and on this struggle to fully release it and fully understand the journey that you went on, so that you can actually see into yourself fully.
Yes, because it's not enough to just have your internal definition of yourself, and it's not enough to just have somebody else's external definition of you. You have to have both. And that's, I was talking to my husband about it this morning, because he actually knows a lot more about, like, the whole Theseus ship paradox than I did. So I was, like, walking through my thoughts with him, and he mentioned the idea of kind of like this dual relationship between the internal and the external, because at the end of the day, like, philosophers can argue about it for years and centuries in this case, but everyone,
it's always
going to
be in the middle.
It always is going to be in the middle. Everyone walks away saying, okay, it's both in a way, however you want to define it, however you want to take it.
Yes.
I mean, it's so cool that that's what it comes down to all the time. I love it. So, yeah.
Sometimes I feel like a broken record with this stuff. Like, I'm like, it's the middle where. It's the path between. You got to find your own journey. But, like, as simple as it is, it's incredibly complex to get there, because it's you. You have to motivate you. You have to be the driver of your journey. You have to walk. You're the only one who can walk your own path.
Yeah.
You know, and this all ties into some of the larger themes that we've seen, like the restoration of soul. Is that internally driven or externally motivated? Well, restoring your soul so that you can live with yourself is you. But then what you do with that is the outside. And some people, like, there's this other philosophical struggle, which is, are you the person that you believe on the inside, or are you what you give to other people?
Right.
And same thing, right? Yeah. Well, it's both.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because you're more likely to do good things for other people if you are trying to do good things to yourself and on the inside and trying to become that good person. But if you're never a nice person to people on the outside, are you actually a good person on the inside? I mean, you know, like,
these are
big ethical philosopher questions.
Yes, they are. And they're all questions, like, you should consistently ask yourself, because, you know, you're always on the journey, and we're always able to ask ourselves those questions. So we should do it, because it makes us better people. But at the same time, there's this idea in these areas of thought, which always come back to, like, you define that for yourself. Like, you define what it is to be good. You define what it means to be bad. And, like, the acceptance of that and the acknowledgement of that, that's basically that transcendent thought. That's that, you know, like, master of life and death sort of thing that Campbell talks about.
The mask of eternity.
Yeah.
You become transcendent of, you know, the linear binary that we all exist in, or that the world itself wants us to exist on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm glad that, you know, MC understands me. I hope other people kind of see the thread of thought that I was going on with that. But
it was great. I love this parallel. It's good.
And I'm glad that it's repeated, because that means that we're seeing something that is there and that is hopefully, like, helpful and hopefully, you know, interesting to people. But
yeah,
I digress. The next thing.
Yeah. I love this moment when, so
good.
Migs is driving and they have to like slow down to go through the village because the road, like this little village that exists with like children and like people, moms and like literally kids of the next generation, right? But like he has to slow down because he doesn't want to run over anybody, of course, right? So he slows down and like Din looks out the window and like looks right in the eye of like a teenager or a young tween in this village who's just like, you thought there was nobody here, but look, you're driving through my village.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I love your thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's a very like judgmental look, and it's obviously saying like, you know, you're ruining my home. And but the actual like kind of meta thought that goes into this is that he's being judged by the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And Din has to deal with that because like he is raising a child into this world. So that means everything that he does is going to affect Grogu's world, every mm-hmm. choice that he makes. And this is kind of the big philosophical question that all parents, all grownups have from the lens of like a hero's journey, that you are shaping the world for the next generation. Well, yeah. What are you going to do when that next generation looks at you and questions what you're doing? Because you're messing things up for them.
Yeah.
I mean, you see this all the time.
Me with the boomers all the time.
Yeah. You know? See this all the time. If you can't look in the mirror and say, maybe I'm doing something wrong if I'm being questioned by the next generation, then like, you know, you're probably messing things up.
Exactly.
But yeah, it was just a really cool moment. I really liked that in terms of and how it was framed with the rest of the show.
Like Campbell will talk about like as soon as you have kids, you are living for them, right? Like that's the outcome of any hero's journey that involves having children. Mm-hmm. Is that you are trying to make the world better for them, and you are living so that they can live a better life.
Right. And again, this is coming from someone who he did not have kids. Campbell mm-hmm. didn't like have children of his own. But there was that acknowledgement and understanding of giving something to that community and giving something to the world within your life. That's really what it is about. Not just your kids, but kids in general.
Yeah. Yeah. And that young man judging Din Djarin for driving through his village.
He represents
tiny moment, but massive.
He represents the entire next generation that's going to grow up in that universe. So it's pretty cool.
And they're not impressed because we know what happened with the sequel trilogy. Sorry.
Oh my goodness.
All right. So what's really fascinating about the structure of this episode is that you can map it to a hero's journey.
Yes. I wish we keep going back to like this broken record.
Yeah, this episode is like a little mini journey and redemption trial.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like go to Morak, experience a redemption. You know, if this was a video game, again, we've talked about the video gaminess of this.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Morak and experience this. You know, quest, right? That's what's happening, right? So,
oh yeah.
So they enter the world from the known, which is Boba Fett's ship. They're like, ah, we must go on this journey. Okay, how do we do this? Oh, we'll sneak in. Okay, so they enter through the underworld, i.e., yeah. the cave that they enter on top of the sort of bug-like juggernaut. Creature thing that they
the
giant they sneak in through the giant beast that goes into the underworld. Yep. And then they transform and sneak like very Greek hero, they sneak to go and steal, right? So they change into the garb of the underworld.
Yes. And there is a treasure that they seek.
There is a treasure that they seek. They go on a literal road of trials. They go on a road of trials. It just makes me giggle so much because it's like so obvious.
It's very clear. Yeah.
It's very clear. They fight the trials that are on there, and then they enter the end like fortress. And although it was a refinery, look, I live in oil and gas country. That didn't look like a refinery to me. It looked like a fortress or a castle. Like you said, it reminded you of
of Maz's castle from TFA.
It
was stylized and very similar. It looked very similar.
And
oh, they also had like the bridge, by the way. So it's like the drawbridge of a castle. Yeah. That's what it had, and
they had to like slow down, and so they enter into the fortress, and then they enter into the internal lair where the treasure is hidden, right? Yeah. And they have to go in, and there's a dragon. Or
that's kind of, you know, guarding
a treasure guardian that's like, oh no, we can't make it past here. How do we overcome this trial to get past the dragon? And we've talked about dragon symbolism in this show before, but of course he's to me, Valen Hess is very dragon like because there's the outwit aspect of it, right? Like, oh, we're gonna be pretending to be somebody we're not and things. And he goes and he sacrifices a piece of himself to gain the treasure, which is not actually the knowledge of Grogu, where Grogu is, which is what we think it is. It is the sacrifices to know himself.
Yeah.
Right. Which like the visual symbolism there. And then on the way out, he is caught by the gatekeeper. They have to, work through the treasure guardian trial. And then escape, right? So they have to sneak, outwit, and slay the treasure guardian, which, you know, from a symbolism and hero's journey perspective is totally all something that needs to happen.
Yeah, including the part where the treasure is not exactly what you thought it was. Like, coming away with the knowledge of oneself is the treasure, not the coordinates.
yeah.
I love it. I just want to mention pretty briefly, because we've talked about Mayfeld throughout, but I really liked the idea that he is the detached hero that refuses to go back. And because of the things that happened to him, because of the trauma of losing his comrades and all of that, and like, you know, being sworn off of being any kind of soldier, right? He doesn't want to be any soldier for anybody now. He has detached himself from the world, basically, and he only works for himself. Mm-hmm. That is a hero that is stuck. That is a hero. Mm-hmm. He is a hero in terms of hero's journey, but he is stuck in the place where he has crossed over the threshold and he refuses to come back.
He's in hell.
He is in hell and he chose to be in hell. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, it's not that he decided not to walk the path and therefore he is in some other version of hell that he doesn't realize is hell. He is gone over the threshold and he has decided to be in that world and he refuses to return. It's a different type of hell. It's a different type of, it's kind of like villains, like any kind of villain, when they decide they're going to not do what society wants them to do and they cross over the threshold and then they just stay there. And that's what makes them a villain. It doesn't make you a villain just because you make bad choices. It's like, you are a villain because you have decided to not be what other people want you to be, but then you're just stuck on that part of the hero's journey cycle.
Yeah. And it if he comes back, we might actually see him resolve more. But the fact that he chose to destroy the Rhydonium and then the base is like, what made you different than the Empire that you were trying to resolve?
Oh, yeah. Have we even mentioned this? Have we?
No.
Yeah, so this is the biggest problem with the episode, I think, is like the idea, like the whole conversation that was had with Mayfeld and Valen, which was that Valen killing or sacrificing all of those people, all of those soldiers. Valen says it was for the greater good. But look where we are now, all of that. He justified it and justified it and justified it, and he doubled down on it, and it makes Migs absolutely disgusted. And then what does Migs do? He picks up the rifle.
Not 5 minutes later.
Yeah. And he kills a ton of people. And I'm like, did you not learn the lesson? I really honestly, and this is why I was rubbed so wrong by this whole thing, was because the moment he picked up the rifle and looked down the scope, I thought he was going to say, I can't do it. I'm different. Mm. Or I wouldn't be able to do that. Or something like that.
But that shows, it's to show the difference between, I think, Mayfield and Din, in that Din is continuing on the journey with the elixir. And Mayfield still hasn't figured that out. He's still stuck in the unknown, the underworld, hell. Like, he's still stuck there. And although he's continuing on his journey, like, he's off to the left, like, having his own adventures and stuff. Like, now he is stripped of everything that he was, but he still didn't make the right choice. Because one thing about the hero's journey, and that this is something that Campbell talks about repeatedly, is that failure is also important.
Right. But in the context,
how it's played in the episode is wrong.
Yeah. It's played as if it's a triumph and it's a lesson for Den, because after he shoots and blows up all of the Radonium, he says, I have to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. Like, as if like,
and
what did you say before we started the episode? You said it's a retribution as opposed to restoration.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he was getting back at them. He's like, you know, he decided in his head, and this is what we were talking about earlier, he decided in his head that those people were evil by his own definition of evil.
Mm-hmm. But they also saved his life. They were also like, this is the tricky thing, is that these things are actually very complicated and very easy to get messed up.
Yeah.
Even though the concept is simple, right? Like, you can explain it in a few words, but it's easy to stray from the path. It is, you know? But the problem is that, like, the other people around him, Fennec and Kara, also are off the path too, because they were happy about him blowing and impressed about him blowing up all of those Imperial, like, hundreds of people you just killed.
Yeah.
Should we be proud of him for doing that? No, with the lessons that we were just confronted with in the episode. I don't remember. Did Din react?
No. I think he asked him. Migs responded to him saying, I have to sleep at night. I don't know if he actually said something in that moment. But that was very strange. And I think they left out Din's reaction on purpose. But also having Kara and Finnick react to it in the way that they did, their non-reaction was very disturbing to me, because Kara saying that was a good shot and then just kind of like walking away from it, it felt, you know, like there was a, I want to compare it, because in the previous episode in the tragedy, there was that shot that Boba took where he blew up the transports, but we can accept that because in the context of the story, those stormtroopers were trying to kill them, right? So in the context of this story, which is dramatized, of course, Boba shoots and he kills he takes the two transports down. But these people were not trying to actively kill them up until the point that Migs makes an enemy of them.
Mm-hmm.
Migs blows their cover and then he decides to blow up the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It felt so wrong.
Well, I mean, what we can say is Migs is not redeemed.
No, but again, it's inconsistent with things, because Kara lets him go and is like, oh, you did good by the New Republic. And it's like, wow, we're going to double down on that. All right.
I mean, again, Migs is right. What's the difference between the New Republic and the Empire?
Yeah.
It's all the machine.
It's all the machine. Exactly. But anyways, that was my big hoopla. And that's why I was so upset, because it stuck with me all day yesterday and it made me feel bad.
Yeah. And I would say I didn't have as strong a reaction. I was surprised it turned that way, because also, like, you know, Fennec's reaction and the people around him and, like, the music play into this is a triumph, but it's not.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, that the most triumphant music that played in the whole episode was the part in which the TIE fighters blew up the pirates. And I thought that was really cool. Actually, that is a part that literally brought tears to my eyes. Like, I was crying watching it, because I was like, this is so cool, because they're blurring the lines to this extent. Mm-hmm. Like, I like that. I think that's really good when we humanize the bad guy, mm-hmm. even when it's just like a pair of TIE fighters.
Yeah,
they humanized a pair of TIE fighters.
Well, and also
sakes.
All the people that were cheering them on as they arrived.
Yeah,
right?
All the people, like, that were blasting, yeah, protecting them and, like, getting, like protecting their back, and then, and yeah, like high-fiving them and saluting them. And it's like, that's cool. That's really, really cool. It's that part of Star Wars that's from another point of view, right?
Mm-hmm.
That whole fun thing in the books and whatnot. But I like that. And I wish they would lean into it even more. But I also wish they would lean into the right messages.
Well, unless we see Migs back, we won't know what the outcome of this was.
Yeah, true.
Right? So
true.
Yeah. Mm. And then, so we saw last episode Din in the ashes pulling out the ball that represents nurturing and fatherhood and like compassion and love, and the spear that represents protection. He pulls these out of the ashes like a mm-hmm. freaking phoenix. Like, there you go. You are reborn. All of these rebirth symbolism. It's like, I do have a comment for people listening to this show. Like, sometimes Ty and I are like, well, that was obvious. And it's just because we're like super attuned to like paying attention to this. But we have to remember that, you know, many people within the general audience maybe aren't as familiar with semiotic analysis as we are. Like, mm-hmm. we are just like super sensitive to symbols and like how they're playing out, especially mythical ones. And so sometimes we're like,
to a fault.
Yeah, like talking
just saying.
Yeah, like we're talking about mask symbolism and helmets. Like, I skipped over it because to me it's just so obvious, but we should actually talk about it before I get into kind of the end peak. but this all ties into him being anointed, mm-hmm. you know, last episode with the powers of his truth symbolically, right? We knew this was going to happen. And then we expected to see him make serious advances towards his truth. Speak yourself, right? Like, who is Din Djarin? He is this person. He is Papa Din, right? He's like, no, I'm not Din. I'm not the Mandalorian. I'm Dadalorian. Like, he's changed his full name to take this as part of his personality. And we see that in him denying the call. Again, hero's journey, denying the call of removing his helmet, fully doubling down on that symbolism, being challenged by it. And then understanding that is the price and the step forward. Like, it's very much like mythologically, it's like, oh, you know, I need to go through this gateway. Well, then you have to go in without your armor.
Yes.
You know, it's that mythic parallel. Like, that's the only way. We see it happen in like Indiana Jones 3. Like, you cannot leave You can't go across this path if you're carrying all your load, or if you have all of your armament. You have to strip yourself bare. You have to remove all of the artifice. I've talked about it at the start of this episode. You have to remove everything you thought you were, be worn down, be deconstructed to build yourself back up again in the new image. And we see that all symbolically happen with, you know, hey, you've changed. you know, Mayfield shames him about wearing the helmet.
He's like oh, the shame.
Oh, the shame. You know, I can see better without it. These are all just, you know, projection reminders that Din is better off without all of the artifice associated mm-hmm. with the external definition of him. It needs yeah. to come from the internal.
It actually reminds me of something that happened in the first season where it, like, right off the bat, like in the first or second episode, I think it was the second episode where he is told, Queel says, you have to get rid of your weapons in order to, like...
Also like, directed by Rick.
Oh, that's so funny. That's really funny. Yeah. And Din, yeah. Din replies, like, I'm a Mandalorian, like, we are our weapons or something yeah. like that.
And you can see the growth.
Yeah.
He is.
And now he has to deal with his armor. It's not about his weapons anymore. It's about his armor.
It's about his armor and his assumptions and his creed. And like, it's everything is being just worn down. And this reminded me, this whole episode, the redemption aspects, the journey, the confrontation of self reminded me of the Avatar The Last Airbender beach episode.
I didn't think you were going to say the beach episode. There's a bunch of other ones, but all right.
But this episode, like, so the beach episode is about, like, the whole point of going to the beach is mm-hmm. to wear away, to wash away all of the things and the artifices and the who you think you are, who people tell you you are. It's all about going through the crucible and coming out the other side.
Yeah, true.
Right.
And the salt and the
salt and the
salt and
the waves
and yeah.
The waves wash away and smooth yep. the rough edges. Right.
Time stands more still because things are move slower. And mm-hmm. yeah. Ooh, interesting.
But this episode is a challenge crucible instead, which also does the same thing because it reforges you as a new person.
That's so.
Yeah.
They
symbolically function in the same way because you end yeah. up like becoming like the new version of yourself.
Yeah.
By experiencing this. But okay, so we see all of these things happen and it's literally like, hey, symbolism happened last episode at the end with the ball and the spear. And then we actually see the outcomes of that this episode. It's like a trial run for the finale of this season. We see him lose his helmet. We see what his creed actually is, which is his internal self-motivated, mm-hmm. who is Din, you know? And then
you see him use the spear type of thing.
The spear activities. Right. And then mm-hmm. at the end, we have that speech again about, you know, he means more to me than you will ever know because you cannot know me. I know me, right?
Yes, yes.
And it's like, ah, I now know the power of the ball in the sphere. I now know, like, I am now, at least for this season, I now am the master of life and death.
Because I have a reason to be.
Yes, yes, yes,
because
yes.
Because I
yes,
have a purpose. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And so, like, with all of this said and how they're working things, mm-hmm. I seriously think that what they're doing is, like, he gets, you know, he does a simple hero's journey. He does a more complex hero's journey. He's going to do a more complex hero's journey. I think that's what they're doing because almost end to end, each of these seasons has kind of accomplished a hero's journey story and structure. And it's been absolutely fascinating. Like, the separation for both Grogu and Din happened almost at the exact same moment and episode as last yeah. season, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just cool. And I do want to shout out, like, my personal appreciation for all of the symbolism, even though, like, because I'm so, like, attuned to it, it's very easy for me to pick up. But I do want to appreciate it because it's showing symbolism to others, you know?
Yeah. And I like the unintentional parts of it that are just so interesting, like the ship stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. They might not have known what they were doing, but it brought a meat to other symbols in the story that just mm-hmm. made it so much more interesting. And I really, really like that. I do just wish that I really am excited to see kind of the gallery episodes behind this season mm-hmm. because I want to know why they were so careful. Mm-hmm. I want to know, like,
they were very careful. And I fear that they knew what was happening with Tross and decided to whoa horses.
Right. I can see that. Because
you think, like, they were very brave with Mandalorian post TLJ, but then kind of got scared because this was built, this was filming, like, over top of Tross coming out.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
But they couldn't, they couldn't have changed the scripts all that much, right? Like, so no. I don't know. I don't know. They made choices to launch entire other shows in the midst of this show, and I never think that that's a good idea. I think if they like a like the character has to be tighter, in there, or the story has to be tighter. And to me, the Ahsoka launch of the Ahsoka show felt too brandy.
Oh yeah. It's just
like we're like, oh, I guess they're launching a show. Everyone's like, I guess they're launching a show. It was like it's like when you're watching a show and you're like, this is very obvious product placement. That's how it felt to me. It felt empty.
Same.
Even though, hey, cool lightsaber, amazing set and shots and cool visuals. Rosario was wooden as hell. So like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not excited for Ahsoka, and I should be, because it's all that cool force weird stuff that I love, you know? And so if they had somebody like Rick directing her, maybe it would have been better.
Yeah, I agree. Because apparently Rick really likes this idea of like stripping someone down to the emotional
core.
Yeah,
I love him. What I love him what's so in the much. Middle
yeah
he makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's good. And if he had more of a chance to write and, you know, direct more with women, like maybe he can do that, maybe he is a good person to do that. I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah.
So many things came out this week that, you know, it didn't.
Like, again, this is the week of the Disney investors call, which they were just like, we're going to just pummel you to death with new concepts and new ideas. And I've been wanting to talk about all of the new stuff, but we don't have time on this show. We deep dive into this show and this what this episode is. But I might try and do a live stream like during the week in an evening or something just to talk about these concepts, because like – I'm in an interesting place mentally with it. So, and I have things to say, and people seem to be interested in my words, which is odd.
Yes, and I do think, like, in terms of the Mandalorian, to try to stay on topic, I think that like all of these ideas of like spinoffs is it can work if you have the emotional meat being focused on Din, but it's not focused on Din, not yet anyways. And I don't know what they had in plan. I don't know what they changed maybe. But there's not enough yet to, I cannot define the Mandalorian except in very silly or like tropey type of,
or like us esoterically talking about symbolism.
Yeah. Or very weird high level symbolism. Like I could go on and on about how he's Parsival and how, but hey, if he gets pierced with that spear, he is Parsival. I'm telling you that right now. But I just,
yes, ma'am.
I could go on and on about that. But at the end of the day, I think that like,
In the end, like we've talked, you and I both agree that it's probably going to be four seasons. And so it's like,
right,
like in the end, it'll be each season is its own journey. But overall, it will be a massive journey. So it has to go dark this season, and there has to be despair. There has to be despair at the end of this season. It is part of it.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like he, like you said on Twitter, I need him to cry. And I agree. We need him to express massive amounts of disappointment and frustration and just utter loss. And that's part of that story, you know? So we'll see. I like seeing right away things are listed as limited versus ongoing. So you kind of have a good idea of like what they're trying to do or what they're trying to set up. And I have a lot of thoughts about what was going on with the Disney investors call. So
interesting.
Yeah. okay. So do we want to speculate about and last episode?
My only speculation is him getting pierced through with the spear and crying. He needs to cry.
Yeah.
I mean, he needs to get harmed. Like,
I would be okay if he wounded. Like he screamed out in rage. To me, that's like a man crying in some ways, you know, like, ooh, just massive display of emotion, whatever it is.
What if he went to Grogu? What if he finally got to Grogu and he's like, come with me? And then Grogu is like, no, because I've seen some people speculate that Grogu's not going to go with him. Like, it's going to be Grogu's choice. Because he wants to, like, yeah.
I mean,
so could I don't know why. I don't know why. Yeah, but I don't know.
I don't see that personally, but that would be cool.
If it did happen, then, and if, like, Gideon could offer Grogu a chance to train in a certain way, then what if, like,
Easy path, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, what if Den is, like, screaming at Grogu, like, I believe in you. I believe in you. Like, wow. I believe in us or something like that. That would be cool. But I do think, like, the most logical thing, if I made a Mando bingo card for the last episode, which we should absolutely do, that'd be so much fun. I would put on there, getting pierced or getting mortally wounded by the spear, it's going to go right in the middle.
Yeah.
And then getting healed by Grogu is going to go right next to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Okay. So Din calling ahead and saying, hey, Moff Gideon, I'm coming for you.
That was dumb.
that was not smart.
I was like, did you not see the Dark Trooper thing?
Our good, like, friends over at Geeky Waffles are like, he is a himbo. I agree. He doesn't make smart choices. He leads with his heart. You know, he's still trying to figure out what his heart is. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's all, like, super important, you know. This can't go well when you call ahead to the evil guy and say you're coming for him.
Yes, exactly. Don't give away your plan.
Gideon, it's time to plan. Good job.
Yeah.
He didn't know you knew.
Yeah, he didn't know he found out where he was. Yeah.
Like what? So
it's going to go badly.
Yeah, it's going to go badly. I mean, mentally prepare yourself for that. And we'll be back in 1 week with with a conclusion to all of this. So
looking forward to it.
Yep. All right, Ty, thank you for joining me for Mandalorian Chapter 15, The Believer. Where can people find you if they're looking for you and your work online?
Yeah, they can find me at on YouTube at Wit and Folly. You can find me on Twitter at Wit_Folly. And you can find me on my personal Twitter at Black_TYM.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone, for coming out. And we'll see you for the finale. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host. Our music is Orchestral Music by Christy Carew for What the Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We would like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love and are obsessed with What the Force. Brad, Cheryl Bell, Melody, Night Huntress in Wild Space, Felicia, How Rude, Anna Perez, Macau Mom, Neil, James, Joe Allen D, Christian Luca, Josh Johnson, Scott C, and Marvin. Make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube or leave a 5-star review on iTunes or any podcast app. It helps other people find the show. Check out our other channel, What the Fiction, for non-Star Wars content. You can connect with us on Twitter at WTForceShow, What the Force Podcast on Facebook, and our website, where we have expanded our content to include reviews, metas, and articles, whattheforce.ca, or on our Discord. Links are all in the liner notes. Feel free to reach out and start a conversation. Cheers.